fine ensemble with Eddie Lockjaw Davis's Heat and Serve. It's from his cookbook series. This one is volume 3 from 1958. Davis, of course, is on tenor sax, Jerome Richardson on baritone sax, my girl, Shirley Scott is on organ, George Duvivier on bass, and Arthur Edgehill on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And in the midst of all the things that are happening, we have to stop for a second and spend some time updating what we have learned about our favorite subjects, our favorite subjects here, which is the Clinton Foundation. Major, major developments to report, and we will get to those. But first, we have to give credit where credit is due. You know that story, the Clinton Foundation story, and the forensics behind it, we have come to learn about that, the finite and minute details from Charles Ortel, who back in the 2007-2006 era was the person who exposed fraud, massive fraud on Wall Street, where he was a banker. And he exposed that many companies, large companies being traded on the market, were in fact overinflating their stock. And of course, you know that that led to a major crash on Wall Street, but he was the person who pointed it out. And even though he was poo-pooed about it, it turned out he was smack on target with his reports and his analysis of what was then happening on Wall Street. He since retired and has gone into a parallel field, the field of investigating finances. And particularly, he decided to look at charity organizations. He's a sworn enemy of charity fraud. And the Clinton Foundation came to his notice. Of course, we've been talking about it. And he took it upon himself to look into the minute details of what was going on to get an understanding. And the more he studied it, the worse it got, the more entangled it got. But most certainly, the more convinced he was that this was no ordinary fraud. In fact, he said that from his vantage point, having looked very, very closely at the facts and things that were not in the files as they ought to have been, he concluded very early on that this was the largest unprosecuted fraud in the history of the United States and possibly the world. So he continued, and it has gotten really, really crazy. The Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation has, in fact, imploded, he said, under the sheer volume of evidence gathered by domestic and now foreign authorities investigating the foundation. The charity and its principals for years have been running a global criminal enterprise, and they have been engaging in a massive fraud. This is where now we are going with the story, looking at how both domestic authorities, most notably the FBI, but not exclusively the FBI. We also have the IRS. We have other prosecutorial agencies looking. And they are beginning now to formalize the approach in terms of how to possibly prosecute this case. Early U.S. oversight of the foundation was largely procedural, but the foundation over the years so far exceeded its original strictly defined and permitted purpose, which was to raise funds to build the Clinton Presidential Library in Little Rock, Arkansas. Instead, the foundation spun off several other, quote, charities, unquote, that were raising hundreds of millions of dollars from donors for, quote, good works, unquote. Federal investigators, however, believe the foundation and its linked charities provided cover for the Clintons to receive pay-to-play money from donors looking to buy political favors and influence. Several foreign governments also have ratcheted up their probes of the Clintons and their foundation, having gotten little or no accounting for hundreds of millions of dollars donated to various foundation causes. They have been sharpening their prosecutorial axes. And this is where we enter, because we believe that the axe will be swinging pretty freely pretty soon. Charles is with us today. Thanks again for joining us, Charles.
It is my great pleasure, Yatrice. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, thank you. Well, where should we start today? I have some ideas, but I'll go with where you feel comfortable going based on what you've been doing lately. Suppose you tell us what that has been and what you found out.
Well, I think a good place to start, now that Robert Mueller supposedly is close to ending this investigation into the possibility of Russian collusion in the Trump campaign, is to go back and go underneath the covers of the messy bed that has beds, I should say, left behind by the Clinton Foundation, and start to think again about the possibility that there was Russian collusion with Russian elements and Hillary Clinton and possibly even Barack Obama going back as far as 2010. That is the big story here that I think is in process of coming out. We know, and I'm in contact with Joe DeGeneva, the veteran Washington, D.C. based or area based former, I think, U.S. attorney of D.C. and now a renowned private practice attorney with his wife, Victoria Tensing. They are representing this FBI informant, a whistleblower, who was involved at the behest of the FBI, laundering money, going back in the 2009 time frame, and is alleged to have documentary evidence linking elements in Russia, foreign control companies in Russia, to routing bribes to Hillary Clinton's State Department, you know, the Obama administration, via the Clinton Foundation in 2009. This is a very interesting set of facts, if true, because 2009 is dangerous territory for the Obama administration and for the Clintons. 2009 is when the Obama administration, under Rod Rosenstein and the FBI, I believe, were pretty far advanced, going after the evil drug company Ron Boxy that still exists and shouldn't, that had been distributing, it is subsequently learned, adulterated HIV and other medicines. They paid a $500 million fine. Rosenstein and, by extension, Bob Mueller, who was then head of the FBI, in my opinion, did not get the Ron Boxy quickly enough, didn't get to the root of the whole story at Ron Boxy, did not undercover the Bill Clinton connections directly to Ron Boxy starting in 2003, via his foundation starting in 2003, through his relationships with Rajat Gupta starting in 2002, the head of McKinsey. He didn't apparently uncover any of that when he was doing this go-slow investigation that picked up steam in 2009 but took 4 years after the 2012 election to get across the line. So 2009, dangerous territory. And then, you know, something I'll just share with the viewers so they understand why I'm interested in this. when I worked for one firm for 11 years early in my career from 1980 to 1991, firm policy was that we were not allowed to read business documents on airplanes, and I spent the bulk of my life on airplanes. So I would read spy novels. And if we go back into that period, you know, 1980 was sort of the winding, the escalating under Reagan of the Cold War, and ultimately, in theory, the vanquishing of the Soviet Union. So I read a lot of spy novels, and I saved them because they're all hardcover first editions. And, you know, when I saw Anna Chapman being rounded up with that spy ring in June, I think it was June 27th, 2010, and instead of being, you know, sent into interrogation, separate places, all these spies, and then, you know, dry clean for a long period of time, when I saw them instead released in an unequal trade in July 7-8 timeframe 2010, so 4 months, 4 months before the 2010 midterm elections, when I saw that happen, I just didn't buy that. It didn't make any sense to me to round the spy ring up and then release all the spies in an unequal exchange where we got back fewer people than we let go. That just didn't make any sense to me. So that's been sticking in my craw for a while. Now we have this Campbell guy who's got all kinds of evidence. Supposedly he's got documentary evidence, thousands of pages, and who knows, bank records and other things. That has been shared apparently with congressional investigators. That gets us back into this crucial period, 2009-10, when the Clinton Foundation efforts were made to reorganize that Clinton Foundation and, in theory, try to regularize it by creating new entities to fight HIV/AIDS, the Clinton Health Access Initiative, a formal entity called the Clinton Global Initiative, Inc., a formal entity called the Alliance for a Healthier Generation, Inc., the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund. All these things were created, I would argue, on the basis of false and materially misleading applications to the IRS in this time frame that were incorrectly approved by the department headed by Lois Lerner. So you have this incredible cesspool that is operating in the early couple years of the Barack Obama administration while Hillary Clinton is running the State Department and while she's doing so explicitly without having an empowered inspector general to check any of this. So this gives you, you know, when you look at it in this way, you start to, and you see that Andrew McCabe, the number two guy in the FBI for a while, a crucial period from, I think, February 1, 2016 through the election, and then after Comey's firing, he was the acting head of the FBI. This guy has just gone through a process where it wasn't Sessions necessarily who fired him. It was the Office of Professional Responsibility inside the Department of Justice. They looked at this file. They determined that he needed to be fired and the way he was fired. And Sarah Carter, who's a great reporter, I think now on her own, a Fox News contributor, she's reporting that McCabe is singing like a canary. Well, if McCabe was dirty, if the number two guy in the FBI was dirty, there certainly are other people in the FBI, other people in the Department of Justice are dirty. And the question becomes, how far back does this go? Does it go just back to January 20th, 2000? Nine, or does it go even further back under the Bush years and maybe under the Clinton years? How far back does this rot go? For how long have people in the FBI and in the Department of Justice had one eye on their day jobs, you know, where they're making not great money? And many of the line people, virtually all the line people, I think, are clean. But it's the management types who, you know, are making, let's say, less than $200,000, which is a lot of money. But it's nothing compared to the value of the secrets that they held and the value of their ability to either launch prosecutions against enemies of donors or to stop prosecutions against donors and their friends. The value of that is so much greater than what their pay that it's easy to imagine, you know, there are bad cops in every police department. There are probably a few bad agents and bad people in the Department of Justice. That's just a fact of life. Humans are bad. All of us are a little bad. And some people are really bad. So what we have here now is this is a mighty, I suppose you really shouldn't be in the business of sawing down sequoia trees, but that's what this is, this McCabe guy, who rumors are when he went in to beg for being allowed to keep his pension, he threatened, according to some reports, people like Sessions and others and said, you know, you do this to me, I'm going to come after you and get you. And then he gave this defiant speech. So we need to go back over this ground and understand, as you and I have talked to Treece at length, why was Hillary Clinton allowed to operate 100% of her official business through leaky servers and bathrooms and cabinets in her mansion in Chappaqua and her mansion in Washington, D.C.? That didn't happen by accident, you know, and it wasn't covered in her book. You know, I did shell out the required, whatever it was, $28 to buy that piece of trash, and there was nothing in it about, you know, how this came to be. And don't tell me, you know, that is something that anybody can do. I mean, I just simply don't believe that the person in charge of the most senior cabinet person, you know, pretty close to in line to succeed Obama if something had happened to him, that person was allowed to transact this nation's business for 4 years using a ridiculous, and I'm not a technical expert, even I can see the risks of operating the way she operated with numerous fake email addresses on personal servers, you know, non-government secure servers. Don't tell me that didn't happen with, you know, a lot of back and forth. There were still Bush holdover people in the State Department, in the FBI, in other places, Justice Department. Don't tell me that nobody among those people said, well, you know, actually, that's not really something we do. We don't really let the Secretary of State operate in this way. And it raises the question, you know, whenever I see something like this, I don't say, well, that's the only place it happened. Did Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett have secret servers? Did other people in the White House have secret servers? Did people in, you know, Justice maybe have secret servers? And, you know, if it was the case under that administration or any administration that people felt they could get around the Freedom of Information Act by just creating phantom names and aliases and transacting government business that way, you know, I know from my work on Wall Street, that is a serious offense on Wall Street when you start using, you know, conducting business using, you know, personal emails and personal aliases and things like that so as to avoid the SEC and the Department of Justice scrutinizing your financial activities. You go to prison for that for a long time, and indeed people have been put in prison for that type of activity. And so, you know, I don't really care, you know, whether the persons, people involved or, you know, what their gender may be, what their ethnicity may be. This is straight-up criminal behavior. And the reason I feel it's so important is that if you allow this criminal behavior, which now people understand is criminal, I know, you know, Drudge Report has, you know, it's probably leans to the conservative and maybe even the conspiratorial audience, but there's a poll up there that as of the time I did my show, Sunday with Charles yesterday at around, I want to say 4 o'clock or so, 4 p.m., that poll, 500,000 people had voted in that poll, which is way more than, if we believe their numbers, of course, but it's way more than you get in a typical poll of like 1,000 people. And 75% of them, or 77% of them, felt that Donald Trump should fire Mueller. So, you know, I think we're at a watershed moment here where people are beginning to see the Clinton Foundation for what it is. Judge Napolitano, who's, you know, not prone to hyperbole on Fox News. He's a pretty, I know him actually, and he's a pretty measured individual. Very, he's a, you know, basically a quintessential judge type person. He weighs the facts, compares it to the laws, he understands the laws, and renders his judgment. He said flat out a week ago Monday that the Clinton Foundation is a criminal enterprise. And so where we've been going with this thing, I realized early on that it was a heavy lift to try to get this, you know, fully exposed in the public and then prosecuted. And I also realized early on that there's no question this is a fraud. So the real sets of questions here revolve around how many people knew about this fraud and how many people, rather than prosecuting it, decided it was better to have a chit against the Clintons to use on the Clintons. And use on the people, let this thing go, and then if you ever get in trouble, you can finger the Clintons, because chances are Hillary will be president of the United States. How many people were thinking like that, and how many branches of the government, how many donors were thinking like that? And, you know, why is it taking the IRS, who could land on poor Corinne Brown, you know, she has her weaknesses, I don't know her at all, I'm sure there are parts of her background that I would hate, But, you know, dopey James Comey, as I like to call him, decides to exonerate Hillary Clinton, and he doesn't even have the role, the right to do that, without really having interviewed her under oath the way she should have been interviewed, granting immunity to key co-conspirators, allowing them to be in the room, letting these dirty agents lead the process. That happens, and 3 days later, in contrast, they decide to land on Corinne Brown, who's running for re-election in a special seat, just as Hillary is on her way running to try to be president of the United States, same age, one is an African-American woman, the other is a Caucasian woman. You let the one running the largest criminal fraud in history, you let her skate, but you put Corinne Brown in prison. And that is just not right. You know, it really isn't right. We have to have a sense in this country that the laws that matter, the serious laws, indeed all laws, but the laws, particularly the laws that matter, that could take a 71-year-old person and end up putting her in federal prison for 5 years, that those laws are administered objectively and fairly, without regard to, you know, the background of the defendant, without regard to the family of the defendant, just with regard to the facts of the case and the law that applies to it. And I look at this and I say, it's not fair what's happening. And people need to stand up on the right and the left, and they need to call on justice to be administered here at the federal level, at the state level, in the many states where this fraud has been flourishing, and around the world. And that's what I've been trying to do with my colleague, Jason Goodman. He has this organization, Crowdsource the Truth, which is a slightly different organization in the sense that it encourages its many subscribers. They now have 51,000 subscribers to actually interact with us and, you know, to take our work and share it with the government officials. And that's started to happen around the world. Different people watch what we do, and they've been contacting government officials, and now I'm being contacted by different governments and interacting with them. And, you know, this thing is working, and I hope, thanks to you, Teresa, actually, you broadened tremendously the audience of people who's interested in this. And I really appreciate that. Your listeners are very active, and this isn't a partisan issue. This isn't most Americans, except for the criminals, are anti-fraud. And
the place where this investigation is now begs the question, why no prosecutions yet? There's more than enough information available to bring forward any number of investigations, but we've seen none so far. However, we've seen on the global level, international level, governments are beginning to sharpen their axe. What is preventing, or what is making it take so long for the U.S. government to get its prosecutorial act together, as opposed to the foreign governments who are moving quite swiftly on this matter?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'd say a case in point is Saudi Arabia, and this Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, will be meeting with President Trump tomorrow, Tuesday. And there's a case where I'd like to think that the Trump team had been thinking this through and realized it was going to be difficult, even for the President of the United States, perhaps especially for the President of the United States, to do anything under these circumstances. So, you know, some deep discussion likely occurred with the people who ended up concluding that Saudi Arabia should be the first nation visited by Donald Trump as president. And there ensued this unusual approach of rounding up a large number of billionaires and princes, members of the royal family, and sticking them in the Riyadh, whatever it is, the Ritz-Carlton, whatever it was, hanging a few of them upside down until they coughed up $100 billion and admitted some of the extent of their corruption. I've got to believe that effort, so not anything we would ever do in the United States that way, nor should we, but that effort most likely has produced evidence of corruption involving U.S. government officials, donors to the Clinton Foundation, and others. And that information, I would guess, has been shared and is probably led people. I was told by a radio host, I won't say who it is, in 2015 or thereabouts, 15 or 16, that when you pull on these strings involving the Clinton Foundation, There are so many problems when you started thinking about public corruption that you could basically, this radio host said he was told that the entire Justice Department squad of federal prosecutors would have to drop everything they're doing just to focus on the extent of this fraud. And so, as a guess, you know, maybe he was exaggerating, maybe he didn't have good information, but just looking at the stuff that's in the public domain, looking at the, there isn't a single public file of the Clinton Foundation that is accurate, not one. They claim to have been operating in almost 70 countries. You know, they haven't filed anything properly anywhere, any state, any country, any IRS form, nothing is accurate. So that's what we know about. Well, they also have these Clinton Global Initiative commitments to action, several thousand of those. Those have never actually been really audited by a true forensic accounting firm to see, okay, what did these grandiose claims? Yeah, I remember one of them was somebody was taking a victory lap in advance for creating a $1 billion green fund. You know, what's a green fund? I mean, is that just a fancy way of laundering money to politicians to get projects back for your construction company? And you know, nobody has actually gone through this yet, as far as I know, project by project, commitment by commitment. And if you're going to go against this, and if you have to appreciate that it's not simply a Democrat thing. It's members of the Republican Party. It's members of the Democratic Party. It's people who aren't in either party. And it's donors going back decades. So there are a lot of people with a lot to lose here. And if you're the person who's, you know, showing up to work every day as a U.S. attorney in Little Rock or somewhere else, you know, you're not a billionaire. You're making a small amount of money in a small town, and you're taking on the world. It's a complex thing. Will you be given the resources you need to do it all? Under Obama, it seems, and under Loretta Lynch, they made sure that the Clinton Foundation investigation did not get the resources it needed, either the subpoena power or the money or the staff. They just didn't get any of that. So it's easy to understand why that would take time. It's easy to understand why, you know, with Chuck Schumer and others in the Senate making it very difficult for Donald Trump to get his key appointees across the line, it's easy to see why that would drag on. The IRS has been, you know, I think, weaponized. And that in and of itself is a massive crime. We don't want to see that standard set in stone, any kind of stone, because, you know, if one party does that, you know, turnabout's fair play. You really want to say it's okay to have the, I don't think anybody, when they think about it, wants the IRS to be anything other than neutral. So it's a big set of scabs to pick off a lot of bodies. And when those scabs get picked off, a lot of blood's going to be flowing all over the place. And if you're going to take this fight, you better prepare yourself, which is why I've spent 3 years of my life, you know, looking at all these angles carefully and reaching out to people I thought could help, and those people are helping. And I would just note to members of the IRS and members of the Justice Department, other investigators, legislators and serious investigators in the private sector, in the media, who do care about truth, justice, and whatever the way is that, you know, that we revere, those people are watching carefully to see what you do. And, you know, if an answer comes back that there's no fraud, then we know that, you know, the system is still dirty and we're going to have to fight even harder.
Well, we know that would be a likelihood because I think this has taken way too long to even get a first wave of indictments. This is crazy.
Well,
I mean, it is insane that given the amount of power and authority and the whole apparatus, the personnel and everything to look at this case, not just one Justice Department, but you have people also in the IRS who could help. You have people at the FBI who could help, unless they're actually admitting that there is such corruption. And on the other side, there is a compromise of the ability to do their jobs because there's so much politics involved here that people are afraid to make the so-called wrong decision and put themselves out there because now they become extremely vulnerable. This is the case of Andrew McCabe. But then on the other hand, they started out with contradictions. Mueller started out with a contradiction where the Clintons are concerned. McCabe himself also had contradictions. Comey clearly had contradictions and conflicts of interest. He was the guy who exonerated Hillary Clinton from any possible entanglement, saying that there's no way she could have been involved in anything untoward. So how do you account for this kind of, this level of open, I don't know what to call it. It's the worst kind of cover up I've seen in a long time. And then to now hand these people the job of investigating the person they've already covered up for,
right,
expecting there would be no new cover-ups. I mean, it's just insane. So I have to ask you, if we can't look to the U.S. government yet to really start things off with a credible prosecution of the Clintons and their foundation, is there any foreign entity right now that is close to the finish line on their investigations with an eye toward prosecution?
Well, yeah. So that's I want to go back after I answer your question and just rebut the first part of it, because I think I actually believe that our government is, in fact, deeply stuck in to our federal and state governments are deeply stuck in to mature investigations that will produce indictments. So I'm not accepting that part of your question, but I'll answer the second part, which is it's a matter of public record that the French government began an investigation on, I think it was December 2nd, 2009, into this entity called UNITAID, which, you know, as far as I can tell, is has no real reason to exist. And I say that because so much money has already been provided by our own government, by We the People, via the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. I think $40 billion or so, 30 or $40 billion went for that. But also through this thing called the Global Fund. These are gigantic organizations that have been sending, you know, lots and lots of money into the very same countries that, in theory, UNITAID was sending money to, in theory, fight HIV/AIDS. But the checkered history of UNITAID and the checkered history of the Clinton Foundation intersect, particularly in the period 2002 to December 2nd, 2009, when on no day in that period was the Clinton Foundation validly authorized to fight HIV/AIDS. Yet, from 2007 through 2009, UNITAID provided close to half of all the many hundreds of millions of dollars, $297 million was sent from UNITAID. Roughly half of the grant money that was expended by UNITAID went to this entity, the Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, that didn't actually exist. And so on December 2nd, 2009, the equivalent of the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee in France, I can't say it in French, but the French head of the Finance Committee of Parliament demanded that an investigation be opened into UNITAID, and an investigation was opened on December 2nd, 2009, and that culminated in a report November 30th, 2011, that actually missed the heart of the problem. It doesn't mention at all, it doesn't seem to appear to have gotten into the fact that the Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, you know, didn't actually exist. And so if it didn't actually exist, how was money sent to it? Because a lot of money was sent to it. So we covered this. There's a wonderful human being who's a long-standing personal friend of mine named Fabien Chalandon. His father was at one point the Justice Minister of France and then chairman of a large oil company, Alpha Aquitaine. I've known Fabien since, I think it was 1985 or 6, and we've done a lot of work together all over the world, and both had fun together as well and done some charity stuff. And he is very well connected in France, and he's been studying this with me for 3 years, and we've been able to get through him to the French government, to the right people, and say, listen, you know, when you had the equivalent of a real, you know, U.S. investigation at congressional level into this matter, you missed the obvious. How could you miss the obvious? You need to go back over this ground. So the French government has indeed, it seems, been going back over this ground. No foreign government is going to act before the United States acts. So it's just the way things work, I'm told, that, you know, that if the U.S. government can't bring itself to make an issue of a matter like this Clinton Foundation, then it's not going to be the French government that kicks it off. But the second there's a public announcement of indictments, which would be the way this should go, the second that happens, as a guess, the French government will move, as will perhaps the Australian government. And I have been invited by the German government, not officially yet, but by representatives of the government, to maybe go and brief them in a couple of months over in Germany. I think the UK government is looking at this. I know the Canadian government is looking at this. And virtually any foreign government that donated money to the Clinton Foundation should be up in arms here. So the Dutch government should be involved, the Swedish government, Norwegian government, the Austrian government. And on top of that, any foreign country that allowed this fraud to operate, particularly I'm thinking in South Africa and across Africa and the poor countries in Asia and the Caribbean, any country that allowed this fake charity to pretend and that was actually in a position to help HIV and AIDS patients when it had no legal authority to do any of that should be ashamed of themselves for allowing this thing to progress and should be asking, you know, how much money was raised in the name, let's say, of the poor people of Tanzania who have HIV AIDS, how much was raised off their backs and how much disappeared to fund fancy travel for the Clintons and political campaigns and high living in Little Rock. You know, that's just not the way that those, as Barack Obama liked to say, that, you know, these are not our values. Americans were the richest country on earth by far. We shouldn't be allowing our citizens, in particular former presidents and aspiring presidents, to swan around the world in private jets the way Hillary is right now. And I hope she's not, that trip is not being paid for by the foundation. You know, we can't let these people do that, assert that billions of dollars need to be raised for causes, and not get the teams around the charities to ensure that those sums are actually spent to benefit the AIDS victims and the Haitian victims and all that. That's horrible stuff, and you can't let that kind of behavior go unpunished because people are watching, and there's some little boy or girl in some town in America watching the Clinton case, and 10 years from now or 20 years from now, that person's going to say, you know what? Clintons did pretty well for themselves. They had two mansions, private jets, hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. They got away with it. I'm going to try to put billions in the bank doing the same thing. If you let this example stand, it's going to encourage more bad behavior. And we've got to make sure. This is, and I also don't like this phrase, a teachable moment, but it is a teachable moment. And it's one that should be used to convince young people not to do it, and also to exhort Barack Obama, as I've tried to do, apparently without success, to mend his foundation. He's currently, I believe, in New Zealand and Australia, arguing that his foundation can do work over there. When I see in the legal paperwork, last I checked, no authority to do any international work. So I wonder what he's doing traveling around the world, in theory, on his foundation. So, you know, it's a big issue, and I think many governments are taking notice of it, particularly now the world economy is teetering. People don't know what's going to happen as interest rates rise. Governments are going to need more money. And, you know, here's a nice way of getting some money back. You know, the money that these governments gave, France has sent $600 million to Unitaid, and a substantial proportion of that was then turned Unitaid has sent $600 million to the Clinton Foundation, and a substantial percentage of that, I think more than 50% of that money, was basically funded by French donations. So, I mean, France has a big dog in this hunt. The UK has sent, I think, I want to say $300 million or so. I may have that wrong, maybe more than that. Norway has sent a fair amount of money. South Korea has sent a fair amount of money. Spain has sent money. And, you know, what's really horrible, Utrice, is that in the Unitaid case, there are a lot of small countries that, you know, are not rich. I think Niger is one of them. that actually donated to Unitaid and may not have fully appreciate how much of this money went to the Clinton Foundation. Now, that gives rise to another point. On November 10th and 11th in 2010, so as the 2009 financial statements for the Clinton Foundation were being put together, on that day there was a board meeting in Geneva. And at that meeting, there was a long report given that lays out exactly by date and amount how much money was sent, in total, almost $300 million, towards this crooked Clinton Foundation HIV-AIDS initiative in 2007, 8, 9, and 10. And that's important because on December 31st, 2009, Bill Clinton's name is attached to an application that went before Lois Lerner's department in the IRS that had to be true and accurate, that is riddled with errors. It is a case study in how not to fill out an application for federal tax exemption. There's so many errors, we'd have to devote the next week or month of your show to go through them all. But suffice it to say, that application says it's not a successor to any other operation, when in fact we have this, you know, contemporaneous document that says actually it was a gigantic successor, and that this entity was being given, you know, forward revenue guarantees. It was taking over the activities of an entity that is illegally operated all over many countries in the world. It's a bold-faced pack of lies, and Lois Lerner, her department, looked at it and said, oh, we'll give it a federal tax exemption. Why not? You know, so there's a big, rich field here for investigators to mine. And we had on our show a wonderful lady yesterday called Robin Gritz, who was hounded out of the FBI when she made a complaint, a harassment complaint. She was hounded out of the FBI by Andrew McCabe. And this is a lady who is down on her luck. She's lost her house. She's had all kinds of problems. But people are now focusing in on her. We had her tell her tale of woe. And people are actually reaching out and supporting her. She deserves to be reinstated. You know, there's a small number of people who had high official positions in the FBI and Department of Justice. Sure seems to me that many of them were dirty under Obama. And, you know, the nerve of John Brennan and Eric Holder and Samantha Power mouthing off to this administration when they start to take an issue with a bad cop. Andrew McCabe is nothing. He's just, simply put, a bad cop. He's been exposed. We don't yet know the full extent of it yet. But going to the first part of your question, Inspector General Horowitz, who was an Obama appointee, and now maybe he'll, you know, confound me and actually give this whole thing a pass, but, you know, rumors come out of Washington are that his report is devastating and, you know, fair-minded and thorough, and it supposedly involves over a million pages of documents. If he's looked at a million pages of documents, then there's a lot there. He must have see more than I see. He's got a team of hundreds of people working with him, and apparently he's also working now and has been working in league with a prosecutor, possibly in front of a grand jury. So I think that for the benefit of Americans across the political spectrum, I actually think this is a case where there will be bipartisan support in the end for exposing the full extent of this. I think it is in the interest of the Democratic Party, frankly, to rid itself of the corrupt Clinton wing, which, Hillary Clinton, in my opinion, is disgracing herself yet again on this latest travel. And you can't go up there on a stage with a megaphone and all your sycophants in the mainstream media spouting lie after lie after lie while you're running the largest criminal enterprise on earth and think that you're going to get away with it forever. I think her time is up.
Well, you know, this is the thing. The Clintons seem to have a knack for just skating under the radar, getting away from being indicted for anything wrong. Even when they're wrong, somehow they manage to have somebody exculpate them. I don't know, since Comey, on a related matter, said that Hillary Clinton was not at all indictable. She didn't do anything to that level of crime that she should be indicted. How do you now proceed these years later, looking at the same person as a likely target of prosecution without it having the effect of double jeopardy. You know, you've already gone through a part of the investigation with a fine-tooth comb. You found nothing. Now you're going to say that, yes, there is something here. How are they going to handle something so blatantly contradictory?
Well, okay, so the investigation, and we've talked a little bit about this, but I'll remind our listeners, the investigation into Hillary Clinton, unauthorized use or mishandling of classified information, was instigated by a report dated July 6, 2015, so a year before the primaries, a year before the election. July 6, 2015, the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community concluded that there was a violation of Section 811C of the Intelligence Authorization Act of 1995, from memory, and that it was mandatory under that law for the FBI to open an investigation into Hillary Clinton's and her associates' mishandling of classified information. The FBI opened a full-scale investigation. Remember the whole thing about Loretta Lynch telling Comey, you've got to call it a matter. No, it was a full-scale investigation. It was opened July 10th, 2015. Now, you know, maybe Washington is so corrupt that people would say, well, you know, somebody's a presidential candidate, you know, just because the FBI is investigating you for mishandling classified information, that shouldn't make it difficult for you to win the presidency against a determined Republican opponent. I mean, maybe it's gotten that dirty, but, you know, I think we need to understand why that investigation was opened, how much, what was the timeline behind that investigation. I would guess and suspect that the timeline began on December, or maybe before December 5th, 2014, when a portion of the emails that Hillary Clinton and her associates had used and sent over this private system was conveyed to the State Department. Around then, as a guess, if not before, somebody decided, wait a minute, we better investigate this, and we better investigate why there was no Inspector General looking on top of the State Department. The investigation took its course. A report was written. We need to see that. American people deserve to see that report. If it needs to be redacted, so be it. But we really should see as much of it as possible. FBI, July 10th, 2015, says, all right, we're going to go for it. Now, what was happening at this time? Andrew McCabe was not yet deputy head of the FBI, but he was still a senior person in the FBI. His wife is running for office. And Terry McAuliffe, there have been press reports that Terry McAuliffe and Democrats, Terry being the governor of Virginia at the time, and people close to him, and he's very close to the Clintons, routed $675,000 towards Andrew McCabe's wife's campaign, which in total spent $1.8 million. There's a great accountant called Kevin O'Rourke down in Virginia who I've gotten in touch with. He's produced documentary evidence that the real number was $1.1 million. Don't tell me that McCabe didn't use whatever resources he could use to run cover first while his wife was running and then losing the campaign to be a Virginia senator, state senator. Don't tell me that there wasn't a quid pro quo involved there. And don't tell me that he wasn't, with Comey, very useful from February 1st, 2016, keeping the lid on this email investigation, even calling it a mid-year exam. Now, if you want to see all this stuff for yourself, there's something called the Hillary R. Clinton FBI vault file. You can Google that, and you'll get to. Just put into Google Hillary R. Clinton FBI and vault, and you'll get to a 19-page dump. You can read these documents with your read document one. It's about 32 pages or so of text with the footnotes missing. But it gives you the story that I just relayed to you. This is what was going on. Why wouldn't Bernie Sanders, I mean, was he that stretched? I mean, he's getting tens of millions of dollars. Why didn't he study any of this? Why didn't he care about these emails? You know, Hillary Clinton's argument, two arguments beyond, you know, being the wife of the former president and the senator, the two arguments to elect her to high position were that she had been a successful Secretary of State, which is rubbish, and her involvement with the Clinton Foundation, which she should be indicted for. Why didn't Bernie care about any of that? So there was a charade that went on the Democratic side of the aisle. Donald Trump, maybe that wasn't a charade. Maybe it was a circus. It was certainly entertaining. He fought back 16 opponents in vigorously contested primaries. On the other hand, Hillary rigged the primaries. And, so who was involved with that? How many people were involved with that? And who was being compensated in what ways for that? How could the FBI have missed all of this? How many people still at the FBI are dirty at senior levels? You know, these are big questions. And the American people, we pay $6 trillion a year all in for government. We deserve to have platinum government. And when this type of stuff happens, the perpetrators need to be fully exposed. They need to be investigated. They need to be convicted, and they need to be sentenced and punished to the full extent of the law, even if we are talking about Comey, especially if we're talking about Comey, even if we're talking about Loretta Lynch or Eric Holder, or God forbid the president, former president himself. You know, if there was a conspiracy here that was, it's not colluding with Russia, if there was a conspiracy between Hillary Clinton interests to install Hillary Clinton as president of the United States so that she would cover up a longstanding set and pattern of crimes perpetrated under the Obama administration and maybe under the Bush years, that's serious stuff, and it can't be swept under the rug. Americans need to have confidence that, you know, our elected leaders and the people in government are following and adhering to the Constitution strictly. When we lose confidence in that, we lose an essential trust that is so important, and we need to have that trust, and we need to restore that trust through this method.
But we also need to ask questions of the IRS. How is it that so many years went by without a proper auditing of the Clinton Foundation? How did you miss all of this stuff that would appear to any trained, even minimally trained auditor in the IRS? They would see that there's something happening here. How do you explain that the IRS managed to ignore somehow the fact that not only did the original entity go outside, that is to say, broke the law in terms of what it said it was going to be doing, and then went into a kind of franchising business? They started up a whole bunch of things, presumably with IRS permission, to start up these other entities that they had no business starting up. The IRS has a lot to account for. Well, the Obama administration has a lot to account for.
Well, and the Bush administration. I mean, what happened was that Lois Lerner, I have this friend, Wayne Allen Root, who was running for office, I think, in Nevada, And that's the time when Lois Lerner was, I think, general counsel to the Federal Election Commission. And according to Wayne, she persecuted him. And, you know, so she made her bones doing that. People noticed that after Gore lost, she was installed as into the IRS and into the key department of, you know, giving authority for charities to operate. And then she was made the head of the charity department starting early in 2006. Right the way through May of 2013, when she was exposed. So there was a long period of, you know, Lois Lerner's tenure and her absurd claim that, you know, before Congress, where she got up there and she said, "I did nothing wrong," gave a long statement, and then said, "Now I invoke my Fifth Amendment rights," something you're not allowed to do. You either invoke them and say nothing, I'm told by lawyers, or, you know, you have to testify. So that example of Lois Lerner cannot be allowed to stand. And the people she didn't do all this alone. The team of people who was working with me on this has found many, many instances of highly suspicious correspondence coming out of the IRS, including possibly the use of forged documents to stop state investigations from going to the heart of the matter. There's a real problem in this charity department of the IRS in particular. And the reason is, Utrice, I think, because everybody suspects business people because, you know, the profit motive is supposed to be so evil. But nobody is cynical enough about the not-for-profit world, because in fact, a not-for-profit entity, you can scam a lot more money out of a not-for-profit entity because there's no competition really with it. You know, if it's done properly, if it's the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation, it's not like there's six other William J. Clinton Presidential Foundations. You want to give money to that? There's only one. And so, you know, you have no real competition for your particular cause. Then if you game the system by having crooked directors and crooked executives and volunteers who don't know what they're doing and donors who know that, you know, the Clintons have a past record of rewarding their friends and punishing their enemies, you have the prescription to scam a lot more money out of a charity than you could ever scam out of a business. And, you know, people are not cynical. We have not brought the rules that apply to charities into the 21st century to deal with mass solicitation campaigns over the Internet, to deal with the fundamental question. The first step in charity fraud is stealing the money, the real amount of money that is sent towards the charity. You, worthy cause, you get $1 billion, and you tell your friends, you know what, I'm really successful. I raised $100 million, and you steal $900 million. If you've got crooked accountants, you can do that all day long. And, you know, that is massive theft that would make Al Capone blush, and especially when it's done in the guise of charity. Thank you.